As everyone files in and hopefully continues to file in, I want to begin by introducing this morning's panel plenum on fostering spiritual growth for men and women in our synagogues and in our communities, both a challenging, necessary, and worthwhile topic for us to undertake. So first I want to introduce on our panel Rabbi Zev Reichman, who is the rabbi, spiritual leader of the East Hill Synagogues here in Englewood, New Jersey, and also teaches in the Mechina program at Yeshiva University, and is a graduate both with a BA in Hebrew Language Literature from Yeshiva University and with an MS from Azrieli School in Jewish Education Administration. Of course, want to welcome and introduce Professor Smadar Rosenzweig, who is a professor of Bible at Stern College for Women of Yeshiva University. And she has received her BA from Barnard, her master's in arts and a master's in philosophy from Columbia University, and of course lectures and gives shiurim throughout the New York metropolitan area and across the country. And of course, Rabbi Kenny Brander, the David Mitzner director of the Center for the Jewish Future of Yeshiva University, the Rabbi Emeritus of the Boca Raton Synagogue, of course, who has written extensively, lectured extensively, and of course is someone who is known to all of us. So I'd like to begin. Each of our panel are going to make a presentation on an aspect of the concept of spiritual growth for men and or for women in our communities, after which there will be hopefully ample time for us to engage in a dialogue with them as well. Who's first? Rabbi Brander.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and to share words with you. I think the way I'm going to structure my comments is really to give a little bit of an overview, and then I think my colleagues will then continue and perhaps drill a little deeper in the practical. It's interesting that one of the unique components about any mitzvah is that every mitzvah has what we call a ma'isa mitzvah, the action itself, and a kiyum ha-mitzvah, what I would call in this case the spiritual goal. In most cases, the ma'isa mitzvah and the kiyum ha-mitzvah happen at the same time. For example, achilas matzah, you consume the matzah, that's the ma'isa mitzvah, and the kiyum ha-mitzvah it happens at the exact same time. Sfiras ha-omer, you see the same thing. But then there are some mitzvot in which the ma'isa mitzvah and the kiyum ha-mitzvah are slightly separate. For example, tefillah, the act of tefillah, the ma'isa mitzvah is the recitation of the words of a fixed text. But as the Rambam tells us, the kiyum ha-mitzvah is the fulfillment, is kavanas halev. And if one doesn't have the kavanas halev, you can articulate any words that you want. It simply doesn't work. Because you need to, for the kiyum ha-mitzvah, you have to have an internal, emotional, personal connection to God. The same thing is true with Shema. With Shema, you can have a ma'isa mitzvah, is a verbal declaration. But the kiyum ha-mitzvah is accepting a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So much so that the Rambam says that if you're putter from Kriyat Shema and you still want to recite it, it's only permitted for you to recite it shetehei daito panuya lav. If you're going to be able to move from the ma'isa mitzvah to the kiyum ha-mitzvah, and that is to connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu through the recitation of Kriyat Shema. And then there are certain mitzvot that it would seem that the ma'isa ha-mitzvot can be fulfilled simultaneously, but the fulfillment, the ma'isa ha-mitzvah can be fulfilled simultaneously, but the kiyum ha-mitzvah is in contradiction to each other. So let me give you an example of that. Personal avelus and simchas ha-chag. You can really accommodate both acts simultaneously, right? For simchas ha-chag, I can eat meat and drink wine as a holiday, and especially if I live in New York, I can walk down the street and not greet anybody, and I'll fulfill the mitzvah of mourning. And the bottom line is, I can achieve both of the ma'isa mitzvahs at the same time. There's no conflict in the external actions. But the reason why halacha is clear that one's personal avelus and simchas achag cannot happen at the same time is Because the kiyum ha-mitzvah, the conflict in the heart and the mind, the inner experience, cannot be achieved at the same time. A person cannot live with an experience of joy of Simchas HaChag and simultaneously with the grief that Aveilus is to represent. And therefore, we don't permit both of the mitzvot to operate simultaneously. I think that one of the challenges that we as Torah observant Jews have is that Baruch Hashem, we are concerned with maybe one side of the ledger, and that is the Maaseh HaMitzvah, but we don't spend enough time thinking about the Kiyum HaMitzvah, the spiritual fulfillment that can be achieved through the celebration of mitzvot. Rabbi Soloveitchik writes that feelings that do not manifest themselves in deeds are volatile and transient. But deeds, what I would call the Maaseh HaMitzvah, that are not linked with inner experiences, are soulless. And by the way, you see this in Rabbi Soloveitchik's own personal life. I think many of us have either read or some of us had the privilege of hearing the fact that Rabbi Soloveitchik learned, first Rabbi Soloveitchik had a tutor. As I'm sure you're aware of, the fact that the Rav grew up in Chaslovich, which was a Chabad town that was mandated to have somebody who was a misnaged as the rabbi. There's actually a story behind that that has to do with Napoleon and the Tsar and the first Rebbe. We can discuss that at lunch. But the bottom line is that the Rabbi Soloveitchik's father was the rabbi of Chaslovich, and he hired a personal tutor for Rabbi Soloveitchik. And Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother realized that her son, who was called Beryl, wasn't really holding in the Gemara that they were supposed to be learning, told Mrs. Soloveitchik, told Rav Moshe Soloveitchik that Beryl's not learning. Moshe Soloveitchik ignored his wife, so she wrote a note to Rav Chaim, who came and tested his son, his grandson, realized he didn't know what was flying in the Gemara, so asked him, what are you learning with this Malamed? And then Rabbi Soloveitchik began to recite all of Tanya Baal Peh. At that point in time, it was decided that Rabbi Soloveitchik would be homeschooled. But I have to tell you something. If you read through the literature of Rabbi Soloveitchik, if you read through Ishalach or Bikashta Misham, and a plethora of other books that Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote, you hear, if you listen carefully, you hear the Chabadnik, the spiritual Chabadnik, inside the language of Rabbi Soloveitchik. And when he moves from Ishalach to Bikashta Misham, you see that Chabadnik and those messages being the living bridge between those two pieces of literature. But more importantly, Rabbi Soloveitchik learned with his father, homeschooled, the following Masechtas: Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, Sanhedrin, Shavuos, Makkos, Gittin, Kedushin, Nidarim, Nazir, Sota, Zvachim, Menachos, Me'ila, Bechoros, Temura, Kalim, Alos, Yadayim, Brachos, Peah, Terumas, Meisasheni, and Bikurim. And Rabbi Soloveitchik writes the following: if I would have learned with my father his words, I would have grown up to be a soulless human being. But it's because of my mother who taught me about the spirituality. Now, this is not his words, I'm paraphrasing. It's because my mother who taught me to feel God's hand on my frail shoulder that I grew up as a human being who had a soul. So here you could have somebody who learned with the person who ran the Brisker movement, a legendary Brisker tradition, and acknowledges the fact that learning all of that without a connection to the spirituality would have made him a soulless human being. And I think that sometimes we have the same challenge. We are so involved with the Maaseh HaMitzvah. We are so involved with making sure that we're committed to the action, we don't take the time for the Kiyum HaMitzvah. As Rav Aaron Lichtenstein writes, our responsibility is to spiritualize halacha and to discipline spirituality. And when we're able to do that, then we'll be able to fulfill and realize the prose and poetry of the ideal Jewish experience. Recently, the faculty of Azrieli Graduate School, and this was basically run by Dr. Pelkowitz, did a survey of schools around the country in which they asked 1,239 teenagers in high school whether they keep what's called half Shabbos. For those of you who are not yet familiar with the term half Shabbos means that you keep Shabbos in all of the externals, but in the privacy of your room, you text, you use cell phones and the internet. So out of 1,239 students who were asked these questions, the first thing is the answers did not reflect gender differences. 18% of those 1,239 students said that they text on Shabbos, with most of them being 16 years old. 13.5% of them said they use cell phones on Shabbos. 15.5% said they go onto the internet on Shabbos. And I believe that one of the challenges is the fact that sometimes we only teach and we only model what I would call the Maisa HaMitzvah, and that we don't speak about the Kiyum HaMitzvah. That Shabbos, we speak about the doings of Shabbos, we don't speak about the fact that Shabbos is about being in a special space, the need for stillness in order to fully develop and discover our identity, the recognition of the fact that when we're constantly wired, we can rob ourselves of the need for reflection. And I'm willing to guarantee you that the vast majority of those 18% of the students who text on Shabbos, if you texted them on Shabbos and asked them what the shiur for a kiddush cup has to be, I'm pretty sure that on Shabbos they would be able to text you back the correct answer. My point is, it cannot just be about the mechanics. It can't be that Shabbos is just about lighting candles, making Kiddush, welcoming in the Shabbos queen, and listening to the Torah portion. It can't just be about the mechanical actions. There has to be a second aspect that we stress, the spiritual fulfillment, the romantic rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is achieved through the observance of mitzvot. And God forbid, the destructive or the lack of wholeness that we will feel in our lives if we don't have that romantic rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We grew up on two terms, FFB and BT. You know, from birth and Ba'alei Tshuva. I'd like to suggest that there are two more terms, and that is FFB-BR and even BT-BR. From birth but robotic, and even now Ba'alei Tshuva who have become robotic. And it's why that sometimes our children, when they enter, and this is not a plug, although maybe it should be for YU, that when our students enter secular universities, so many of them, and we all have had positions, we all are engaged with young college students, some more than others, so many of them walk away from Judaism. Because we've created a silo between what I would call the Maisa HaMitzvah, the physical act, and the Kiyum HaMitzvah, and the spiritual goal. It's why Hasidic masters, so many, it didn't start with Hasidic masters, it's fine in the Gemara. It tells us that Bedikas Chametz is about finding the true Chametz in our hearts and our souls. It's why Sfiras HaOmer needs to be connected, not just to some counting, but the spiritual and physical freedom that we move to from Pesach to Shavuos. And the responsibility to speak about the spiritual freedom and and sometimes the shackles that we still have within our lives. It's about finding a religious experience that has some subjective romance. It's why Rashi in Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Vav Amud Beis changes the language of the Gemara and says, Rachmana Libabai, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our souls, our hearts. He wants to connect to us in a spiritual way. And sometimes we're so involved with what I would call the Maisa HaMitzvah, that we never take the time to find the spirituality in that Maisa and how that helps in the Kiyum. And so to conclude, how do we remedy this? I think that first we have to model certain behaviors. We have to create a safe space to talk about God and belief. We have to find ways that educators and parents become comfortable with talking with their children about God. And by the way, they're looking for it. Now recently, at the request of many people, we started creating these Shabbos table conversations, and with the help of Rabbi Freundel, hopefully we'll take that to its next level. We started doing these Shabbos table conversations in which parents and children talk about various issues. And we put it online because, quite honestly, we couldn't afford to send it out all over the country. We have anywhere between 3 to 10,000 people downloading these Shabbos table conversations every single month. People are hungry for conversations to have with their children that takes the ideals of Judaism and concretizes it in a spiritual and a tachlitic way. Just imagine if we found ways for parents to share with their children before tefillah their challenges with belief. Just imagine if instead of giving a drasha every single week, maybe once every 2 months, we created during the drasha slot that parents and children spend some time talking to each other about the role of God within their life. Imagine if we as Rabbanim and as faculty spoke about our own relationship with God and our own practice. I remember many years ago when my wife and I lost a child, one of my greatest challenges was how to deal with God after that loss. And I think for me personally, although my wife handled it much differently, my conversation almost with my community about finding a space for God within my life again not only empowered me, but I think empowered them. Because for the first time they saw somebody hopefully who was committed to a Jewish experience but was struggling of how to re-engage in a romantic relationship with God. How many hours a year do we as teachers or Rabbanim talk about God in our drushes? And when we teach Baba Kama about a cow who kicks a stone and the notion of Chatzi Nezek Sroros and all those other issues, do we spend an extra 10 minutes in that conversation to speak about the role of God in that experience? Do we say that, after all, this Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra accentuates the relationship we have with God? Because how can you have a relationship with God if you're not sensitive to the needs of other human beings? We have to model that to our children. You know, we send, over the course of a year, around 1,000 students on various types of what I call service learning missions. And I remember the first time we sent a group to Nicaragua, we sent them with a rabbinical student. And I realized that I made a terrible mistake, because the rabbinical student learned some of the laws of kashrus. But imagine if the group who went to Nicaragua went with Rabbi Yosef Blau or Rabbi Tzvi Savalovsky to a place like that. And all of a sudden, you were able to translate the work that you were doing to help other human beings into a context of a spiritual relationship with God. Imagine in all of the development towns that we send students to during the summer, Yerucham, Dimona, Arad, that Rashi Yeshiva lived with them in those development towns so they could talk about the spiritual connections with God that happen when one engages in helping other people. The experience, the incubator of these development towns for our students totally changed. Each of us in our own pulpits have those capacities, have those opportunities. And the bottom line is we're afraid to talk about God. The bottom line is that God spends very little time in the yeshiva high school curriculum. The bottom line is that even Rabbi Soloveitchik, who had a master teacher, realized that if it wasn't for his mother speaking to him about God, his words, he would have grown up as a soulless human being. And the question I think we need to ask ourselves is, how do we find ways to make sure from our pulpits, to make sure in our teachings, to make sure in our engagements with high school students and younger, that we find ways to talk about God in very serious, concrete ways? It doesn't mean we have to have all the answers, but simply by having the conversation, I believe that we will raise the level of spirituality in our Torah community. Thank you.
Pershus Morai V'Rabosai. In Parshas Vayechi, as we all know, Yosef HaTzadik brings Menashe and Ephraim to his father with the intention that his father would first, or would primarily, give a bracha to the Bechor, Menashe. And then secondarily, with his left hand, give a bracha to Ephraim. But Yaakov Avinu doesn't do that. Sikelas Yadav, he crosses his hands and instead puts his right hand on Ephraim and his left hand on Yosef. So that primarily the bracha was given to Ephraim and secondarily the bracha is given to Yosef. Shemi Shmuel, in several places in his drashos to Parshas Vayechi, asks, what's the deeper pshat in this machlokes between Yaakov Avinu and Yosef HaTzadik? Why did Yosef HaTzadik feel that the primary bracha should be Menashe and secondarily Ephraim? Well, Yaakov disagrees and Yaakov felt that the primary bracha should be Ephraim and secondarily it should be Menashe. And he suggests that this really is based on a very big machlokes in Avodas Hashem. Pasuk says, Sur Meira, and then Va'asei Tov. First leave Ra, get away from all Resha, lowliness, Yetzer Hara, Chomrius, and then Asei Tov, then add Ora, Kedusha, that which is above. And that was the Derech of Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik's greatest moment was when he ran away from Eshes Potiphar, when he courageously conquered his Ra, ran away from Ra, and through that tremendous display of Gvura, merited to reach tremendous levels. So Yosef HaTzadik felt that the correct derech, the way to guide his children, and really all of Klal Yisrael, once they would be in Mitzrayim, would be to follow the same approach. To first engage in Sur Meira, to first engage in walking away from Yetzer Hara, walking away from Averos. And then once the vessel, as it were, is purified, once a person is cleansed of impurities and lowliness and evil, then to add Kedusha, then to add Asei Tov. And that's why Yosef thought that the first bracha should be to Menashe. The name Menashe, as we know, is because Ki Nashani Elokim es Kol Amaliv es Beis Avi. Nashani is Milashon Shikcha. Menashe represents leaving something behind, forgetting something, letting go of something. And so Yosef felt first it should be letting go of all the Ra that's within a person, letting go of all the Yetzer Hara, and then Ephraim, Ki Ephrani Elokim, Bi Eretz Anyi, then Ephraim, then Ribui, then adding Kedusha, then Hosafas Or. And especially when we would begin Galus. Galus would be a time of tremendous spiritual challenge, tremendous difficulty to maintain holiness and Kedusha. So especially in a period of Galus, it would be necessary to first have a commitment to leaving Ra, to Sur Meira, and then to Asei Tov. And Yaakov Avinu disagreed. Because Yaakov Avinu felt that that truly is the ideal. But unfortunately, when we are in Galus, if we wait for the Asei Tov till we first have the Sur Meira, we'll never get to the Asei Tov. Because we'll keep slipping again and again, and we'll get upset at ourselves. We have to keep fighting and keep fighting. We'll get depressed and we'll get down, and we'll never get to the chance to have the Asei Tov. So Yaakov Avinu said no. In Galus, you actually have to start with Asei Tov. Start with Ephraim. You're not kosher, you're not pure, you're not wonderful, you're not holy. Okay. Learn and do mitzvos and add Kedusha. And through the Asei Tov, you'll eventually get to the Sur Meira. First Ephraim, and then Menashe. Shem Yishmuel says the same basic yisod in his commentary to Parshas Vayakel, where he asks, why is it that the Torah teaches us of Shabbos after Meleches HaMishkan in Parshas Kisisa. First we have Truma and Tetzaveh, which is all about Meleches HaMishkan, and then in Kisisa we have Shabbos. Whereas in Vayakel, first we have Shabbos, and then we have Meleches HaMishkan. He has a whole ma'aracha to explain it, based on Luchos Rishonos and Luchos Shnios, but the basic bottom line of his approach is the same approach. Meleches HaMishkan really represents Tikkun Olam HaMaaseh, fixing the Sheishes Yimei HaChol. Yodea haya Betzalel Letzarif Osio Shebehen Nivru Shamayim Va'aretz. Betzalel had the ability to create a microcosm of a beautiful Olam HaTeva within the Mishkan. Shabbos represents that which is above the Olam HaMaaseh. Shabbos already represents the Olam HaRuach. So first we have Truma and Tetzaveh, and then Shabbos. The ideal really is to be Masakin the Olam HaMaaseh through Sur Meira, and then to get to a Shabbos. But after we have the Chet HaEgel in the end of Parshas Kisisa, Klal Yisrael is not on a level where there will be matzliach, where they would succeed in being mesakin the Olam HaMaaseh, on getting away from all the evil and then reaching a Shabbos. So here Hashem said, you know what? You need a Shabbos to inspire you to then build a Mishkan. First you need an Asei Tov to inspire you to then arrive at a Sur Meira. I share these two Divrei Torah because, as we all know, the two greatest drachim in Avodas Hashem last 250 years was, on the one hand, the Derech HaChassidus, and in the words of Rev. Leo Kaplan, its stepsister, the Derech HaMusser of Rev. Yisrael Salanter. And in a certain way, this Dvar Torah, this machlokes between Yosef and Yaakov Avinu, as explained by the Shem Yishmuel and the Sfasemus and the Chidush Arim and many other Sfarim that say the same part, is in a certain way this machlokes. There's a very big mekubal in Eretz Yisrael. His name is Rav Yitzchak Morgenstern, who's extraordinarily prolific. And in a sefer of his Yama Chachma, he analyzes the differences between the Derech HaMusser and the Derech of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov. And he points out that in the Sifri HaKabbalah there's a discussion of two levels of reaching a spiritual ruchniyistic attachment with Hashem. One is called Yehuda Ila'a and the other is called Yehuda Tata'a. Yehuda Ilah is represented by the Pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Yehuda Tata is represented by the Pasuk Baruch Shem Vod Malchuso Li'olam Vayed. There are many, many discussions about these two Yehudim, these two levels of reaching HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in a very, very coarse and superficial manner, Yehuda Ilah is reaching Hashem through the transcendence, rising above the physical, connecting to the sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Melo Kol Ha'aretz, Melo Kol Ha'olam Kvodo, that Hashem is Memale Kol Almin, and Sovev Kol Almin, that Hashem is everywhere, Hashem is everything, Hashem is beyond anything which is physical. Yehuda Tata is to be found within this world, within the realm of the physical. To find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the avoda of Yehuda Tata, Baruch Shem, Kvod Malchuso Le'olam Vayed. So he suggested that the machlokas between the Gaon of Vilna and the Derech HaChassidus was a machlokas as to what to emphasize. The Derech HaChassidus is to emphasize Yehuda Ilah, whereas the Derech of the Gaon of Vilna was to emphasize Yehuda Tata. In other words, the real machlokas between the Gaon of Vilna and the Hasidim was not about how sharp knives have to be, or whether to follow the minhagim of the Ari HaKadosh or not, because the Gaon of Vilna was clearly immersed in the Torah of the Ari HaKadosh just as much as the Hasidim were, and there's no question that the Hasidim were tremendous tzaddikim and medaktikim bahalacha, and they were not antinomian Sabbateans. Chas v'shalom. The real depth of the machlokes was a machlokes of what to emphasize. The derech of the Gaon of Vilna was to emphasize the avoda in this world and avoda of Sur Meira. And the derech of the Hasidim was a derech of Yehuda Ilah. It's true that we're defiled and impure, but we can't wait till we become pure. We have to jump right away to an exalted, high level of Dveikus Vashem, and at that very high level of Dveikus Vashem, for everything else to be elevated to that. To find the Kadosh Baruch Hu everywhere. As there's the famous machlokes between the Baal HaTanya and the Gaon, where the Baal HaTanya writes in one of his letters, I'm sorry, the Gaon, the Talmidim Agra wrote in one of their letters to the Baal HaTanya, how could you emphasize constantly that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere? Would that mean that you could have thoughts of Talmud Torah, Chas V'Shalom, and a Beis HaKisei? And the Baal HaTanya responded, so do you think in the Beis HaKisei Hashem's not watching what you're doing? How could you say HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not everywhere? But the Machlokas really was a question of what to emphasize. To emphasize the presence of Hashem everywhere, which is the Derech of Chasidus of Yehuda Ilah, or to emphasize that we need to be misgaber on Ra, we need to fight Ra, we need to defeat Ra, and through defeating Ra, we can arrive at Kedusha. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the derech of the Baalei HaMusar, which is really the derech of the Talmidei HaGra, is one of fighting with Ra, of Sur Meira. It's all about focusing on a person's own flaws, a person's own weaknesses, that he's a terrible person by nature with a horrible Yetzer Hara, and to continually encourage a person to work and to toil, to transform himself, to become someone who is Tov, someone who is Kadosh. Whereas the Derech of the Baal Shem Tov is not to talk so much about Sur Meira, not to talk so much about Yiras HaOnesh, not to talk so much about fighting with ourselves, but rather to be more attached to more elevated levels of just Asei Tov, more and more and more Kedusha. I share this esoteric, these esoteric words because I think certainly in terms of increasing the Ruchnius of our Balabatim and of our youth, there's a tremendous treasure load of approaches and of Divrei Torah that have already been set out for us. We don't need to come up with new or creative ways. It's all there. It's all there in our holy Sfarim, in the Sifrei HaMusar, in the Sifrei Chasidus. And we should, I think, take those approaches and share them with our Balabatim and share them with our youth. The challenge becomes, at least in my limited experience, how can we find ways and find the vocabulary to present the ideas in such a way that people will be open to listening. So I think there are, you know, here there's obviously room for a tremendous amount of creativity and a lot of different ideas. I'll share some of the things that I've found to be successful. Number one, I think we can all give shiurim on those svarim that are personally very inspiring for us. In my shul, I have a shiur on Sifrei Rav Kook. I have another shiur on the Tanya. It was a period that I gave some shiurim on Sifrei Musar. And it's fine to take a sefer, sit down with a small group. I haven't found it got large numbers of people to come. But even if 5 or 10 or 15 people within a shul of 100 or 200, they gain a tremendous amount. There is a spillover effect. They say that they once asked the Chazon Ish, why is he living in Bnei Brak? So many Jews all over Eretz Yisrael that need Kedusha and Talmud Torah and guidance. He said there are two ways to pour from a cup. You can walk around with the cup, pouring in each cup, or you can keep pouring into your cup so much that it spills over until it spills over into all the other cups. And that happens that when there are people within a shul who, even if it's yechidim, if they become spiritually excited, motivated, inspired, it spills over and it has a wonderful spillover effect on many others. Another thing that I've done is I've actually taken people from my shul to chassidish settings and set up settings where they can interact directly with Hasidic teachers, people who would teach, people who would talk to them, taking groups down to Borough Park on Sukkot, for Machal Space HaShoeva. Then we've had private meetings with different Rabbanim, where people got chizuk and they got a whole new way of seeing things. In the Mechina program at YU, I've sent groups up to Skver for a Shabbos, and they had a Matzah Shabbos meeting with the Skver Rebbe. It's important that people have new perspectives and people see a broader view and hopefully an inspiring view. Another thing that I've found to be very meaningful, although for economic reasons it's not something that everybody can do, is to actually take people out of their current environment, put people on a plane, go to Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael expose people to very inspiring figures. I've taken groups of fathers and sons before their bar mitzvah to Israel for a bar mitzvah mission. And for that mission, it's probably the hardest week of the whole year for me in terms of how hard I'm running. I'm running all day, but we're not going on tours. We're not going on hikes. We're not going on, you know, we're not looking at Israel as Disneyland. Israel is an opportunity to expose us to all sorts of inspiring experiences. So we've gone to children's homes of Emuna. There's an amazing children's home in Netanya, Beit El-Ezraki, headed by Yehuda Cohen. Unbelievable person. I found that people in Englewood, when they interact with him, when they sit with 250 orphans that are happy, that are joyous, that are excited, that are davening with Kavana, it transforms them when they come back to Englewood. I've taken groups to meet with Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon of Alon Shvut and to learn with him. I've taken them to meet the head of Yeshiva Shara Shamayim, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Steinman, any possible exposure that I can. When somebody is away from his business and his comfortable surroundings, and he's running all day, he's running in army bases, and he's volunteering, and he's in a soup kitchen, and he's in a soup pantry, it opens people up. And then when they meet people that are idealistic and that are completely devoted to Avodas Hashem, it has a very big impact on raising people spiritually. So I would suggest everyone has to find their own ways to take from the great mother loads of our tradition of Sur Meira and Asei Tov, to translate it into vocabulary that works within your community and your kahal, and hopefully to have a lot of siyata d'shmaya in all of those efforts.
Hi, it's really a pleasure to be here today. Our mandate was to speak about fostering spiritual growth for men and women in our communities. We each have 15 minutes, and for mine, I chose to focus on women. And obviously, there are so many different issues to really discuss when we focus on women. There could be educational modes, there could be communal organizational modes. Since this is an RCA convention, so I'm focusing more on the shul rabbi and what can the shul rabbi do in a community. First of all, women today are so fortunate to be the beneficiaries of so many educational and spiritual programs that are out there. I myself really have grown up completely in this kind of environment. And the truth is that this really is a momentum that is continuing in our communities. And I think that we have to really work on this idea of fostering, you know, spiritual growth, especially for the women. So what I'm going to do today is mostly deal with some practical suggestions in this small time, but I'm just going to start with a small theoretical basis. So what, let's say, is the, you know, theoretical basis, or, you know, what are some of the ideas that really promote this kind of mindset and thinking? Women and men are created equally in the image of Hashem and strive for a meaningful life through Avodat Hashem, which is manifested in the unfolding of Ritzon Hashem, divine will, and as we understand it, the halakha. While women and men have theological equality in Judaism, right, the Kedushat Yisrael is really equal, the nature and expression of their unique qualities differs tremendously. So consequently, their paths to reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu are very distinct. As a result, the halachic obligation of men and women reflect this diversity. So the spiritual destiny then of an observant woman is fulfilling her unique role as a Jewish woman. Women throughout the centuries have really been indispensable to the religious well-being of the Jewish family, community, and have always played a central role, if not a public one. While men's ritual energy focused on communal aspects of prayer, family rituals, women's energy usually focused on home, family traditions, and private religious devotion. So how could a modern woman find a nurturing, inspiring, and uplifting place within the Jewish community? And the truth is, we have been very successful with this throughout the years. And the question is, how do we continue this within the framework of halacha, not only, you know, practically, but also within the hashkafa of halacha? For while the halacha has prescribed more of a detailed framework for a man to be an Oved Hashem, right, women inhabit a larger playing field with fewer rules, which means men's rules are really much more prescribed. So as a result, women have a lot more say in determining certain aspects of their spiritual identity because it's not defined in the same specific way as a man's. That's why I did these convergent circles. If you look at the sheet that I handed out, and if you don't have it, I'll describe it. These are two convergent circles, and really in the middle, most mitzvot of Ish and Isha are really similar, which means really most of the goal of women and men is similar in Avodas Hashem, which means most of the main focus. However, if you look at the side for the men, really their involvement is much more mitzvah aseh shehazman grama, the chiyuv of Talmud Torah, the ritual and formal involvement in family and community. So the men really have a much more defined role. While in the women's side, we see tzniut, taharat mishpacha, nerot shabbat, hafrashat chala, right? Responsibilities of the wife to the family, right? The idea of the isha lashevet yitzara, right? Women have to know Torah, but are not formally obligated in chiyuv Talmud Torah. Women are not formally obligated, right, in pru urvu. So we do have a difference between the men and the women. And we also have tzniut, right, as a very important feature of the mandate that we have for the women. So while we have so much in common, there really is a difference between the goals that we have for men and women. I think we have to keep that model. I mean, they are convergent circles. There is a lot that is in common, but there also are different emphases for the men and the women. I think that is also a very important model to follow, that we have similarities, but we also have different goals and ideals for the men and the women. In defining what are the men and the women's role, it's also very important that the rabbi and important Torah personalities should really be the Ruach HaChaim behind what is defined and what direction the community should go. I think that that's very important in really setting the tone for what are our goals. So I'm just going to give some practical suggestions for today. So within this theoretical framework, the question is, so what practically can we do? And since I'm not a rabbi, I'm sticking to the practical programming. So what are some of the What are some suggestions? Really, the three pillars of our involvement in community world is in Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim, right? Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omed, Al Torah, Avodah, Gemilut Chasadim. So what are our goals in Torah learning for women? So Torah learning really should be a major involvement for women. Women are very well educated and sophisticated today, and our educational programs have to maintain that level. Hashkafically, women learning and being learned has always been a staple in the Jewish community, right? The Midrash explains that Sarah was megayeret the nashim. She was side by side with Avraham Avinu. We know that Miriam was a neviyah, and according to Rashi, she was a mora lenashim, which means we already have this model that women were involved in educating other women already all the way back in the time of the Tanakh. And Chazal and the Mefarshim, and especially Rashi, emphasize that. We have the story of Benot Slovchad. How does the Gemara describe Benot Slovchad? The Gemara in Baba Vatra describes them as Chachmaniyot, Darshaniyot, and Sidkaniyot. Chachmaniyot, that they knew the halacha, and they approached Moshe, right, and the Gedolim of their generation with a specific formulation of a halachic question, which means that the idea, right, of Talmud Torah among women, even though women are not chayav in Talmud Torah, the fact that we have so many Divrei Chazal, that women were educated, women were learned, there was a certain knowledge among the women, that it's not a new thing. It's not just since Sarah Schneer that we have women who are learning, just that a formal program that women are learning en masse, and really it's not just for Yechidei Skula anymore, but it's really for the wider population, is something that we should embrace, not only because it's a modern phenomena, but really within the view of Chazal, right, we have this idea of the importance of the women really playing that important role. We have Devorah, we have Chuldah HaNeviyah, and again, as Rashi describes, Chuldah, she was sitting in the Mishneh, right, and that's where they found her teaching Torah to ask her for her Nivuot. Now that women are formally schooled, and really, women's education is much more widespread and wide-ranging, so some suggestions. Women should be attending and also delivering shiurim in the community. In many communities, it really should just be women on women. It depends on each community. There definitely should be shiurim on Shabbat, on Chagim, on weekdays or Rosh Chodesh, right? Important events should always have a shiur or a Dvar Torah as a highlight, which means almost all women programming should really have some sort of Dvar Torah included in it. And ideally, right, it should definitely be surrounding some kind of shi'ur. Textual learning should be encouraged, and days of learning, yimei'iyun, should really be developed. There should also be one-on-one learning, which means women's learning should really continue to be, because it's not a new thing, should really continue to be a focus in the community. Here are just some practical suggestions. Maybe there should be something like a three-pronged program. Number one, general shiurim, which women should be encouraged to attend. But there also should be specific shiurim for women. Women like going to shiurim that are specifically focused to them. And again, we heard all different kind of, you know, religious involvement and focus that women should have and men should have. As we know, the majority of the goals of men and women are similar. But I think it's very important to have general, intellectual, and inspirational, either Tanakh, Halakha, or Machshava Shiurim, role modeling through Tanakh, Chazal, and Jewish history. For example, on Shabbat or Rosh Chodesh, or Shabbat that Mevarchim Rosh Chodesh, maybe there should be special Shiurim, or during the week there should be, right, since Rosh Chodesh is a special time for women, there should be every, you know, Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, or during the week when Rosh Chodesh falls, there should be, you know, a special shiur by women for women. Kew Garden Hills, my, you know, neighboring community, runs one of these programs, and it is very successful. Every week of Shabbat of Rosh Chodesh, right, so it's once a month, they have this women for women shiurim, and it's very successful. They invite women from actually all over the Jewish community, but also all over the world. Another example, in Simchat Torah, after the Hakafot, right, when the men are all receiving aliyot, maybe there should be a special she'ur for women. We do this in our community. It's very successful. So after the morning Hakafot, when all the men of the shul need to get aliyot, which takes a very long time, so we have a special she'ur for the women. So women are involved in Talmud Torah on Simchat Torah. Another idea, Tikkun Leil Shavuot. So number one, there should be a Tikkun Leil for women, and also when there is interest, right, for women to learn throughout the night, so there should be also paired women, chavrusa, learning throughout the night. But we all know there are a lot of women who don't stay up late, women who have young children, so there should be shiurim throughout the day for those women, right? The men stay up all late, they go to daven early, and then they're pretty much out the rest of the day. But during the day, there should be on Shavuot programming shiurim specifically for the women. In Sukkot, right, there should be a special shiur for women in the sukkah. Sudah shlishit, maybe once a month, coinciding with Birkas HaChodesh, maybe, there should be an all-women Seudah Shlishit. I know Fifth Avenue Synagogue does this. Every month they have a women's Seudah Shlishit, either in the shul or in someone's house. So this way the women give Divrei Torah to their other women, and they could sing, and they definitely have many more outlets, right? Not everyone also is involved or interested only in Shiurim. We also have to foster other ways of interest and religious involvement. The other pillar that we speak about is avodah. So number one, in kiyama mitzvos, right, women and men have similar, you know, interests and goals, and the idea that kiyama mitzvos is important. So again, shiurim or involvement should really be emphasized, that the idea of kiyama mitzvos and the how should we say, the ruach halacha and the attitude, you know, that one has is very important. How do you do a mitzvot? The idea that women are very involved in aesthetics. So it should be emphasized, the idea of noy, of hidur mitzvah, that that definitely has an important value within the Jewish community. So setting a nice Shabbos table shouldn't be seen, oh, that's something that's just superficial. Really, it's within the concept of, you know, hidur mitzvah. Different women have different kind of interests, and because our area of Avodas Hashem is a little amorphous and more wide-ranging, so these areas can really take up a bigger role. I think it's very important for the women to really be not only well-schooled in, but understand the integration of the physical and the spiritual when we talk about Tahara Mishpacha and Tzniut. Tzniut is beyond just, you know, how you dress. It's how you think. It's Kol Kvuda Bat Melech Pnima. It's self-confidence. It's the idea of really being focused on higher goals and Avodat Hashem, being a spiritual being. And I think that really trying to give over that lesson, we know from all sociological and psychological studies that a very early positive self-image really translates throughout your whole life. And I think reinforcing that throughout the life of, you know, a woman, again, and maybe having, you know, special shiurim, but again, in the educational community, that is a very important aspect. Even hafrashat chala, nerot Shabbat, specific mitzvot for the nashim, really should be emphasized and understood that it has a certain significance, setting the tone for the house. Hafrashat chala, we have a certain hotline in our community, that when you do hafrashat chala, that you should keep in mind the different people who are sick or need any kind of special tefillot. So that, again, when you do it, it's just beyond the actual action itself. And the idea that women are constantly doing mitzvot that are raising the mundane and the physical to the spiritual should be emphasized. It is something that really transforms the entire environment in the home and also in the community. Women are obligated in tefillah, and I think it's very important that we emphasize women's interest and involvement in tefillah, shacharit and mincha. And while women do not have an obligation to pray with the minyan, their tefillot have tremendous force as individuals. And I think it's very important that tefillah really should be emphasized. And the idea of kavanah, we know, was really first formulated by Chana, right, all the way back. And for centuries, right, women have written and said tchinot. Women have always had different Tehillim groups, and also, it's very important, women play a very big role in saying Tehillim for the Cholim, and in sticking really the names of Cholim in Rifa'enu, and this idea of caring about others, of having this kind of involvement is very important. So I think in Avodah, whether it's in Kiyuma Mitzvot, specific Mitzvot for the Nashim, or in Tfilah, women definitely have a very important you know, role to play. And I think we should encourage women to come to shul also, which means women should really feel part of the larger congregation. Gemilut chasadim. social justice. There's so much to be done in communities regarding helping the poor, the disadvantaged, equalizing the social disparities, tzedakah, food pantries, gamachs for helping the sick, the bereaving, right? Even for setting up a simcha, recycling, right? Clothing, work for Israel. Women have historically been at the forefront of gemilut chasadim, of chesed. And again, because chesed is really one of the most important aspects of any Jew's, right, life, especially for the nashim, right, that chesed always played a very important role. I think we should emphasize the idea of chesed. And again, because women don't have certain formal obligations, chesed really does play a very big role. And not everyone is a big intellectual. Not everyone is really interested in being involved in shiurim per se. And I think that really focusing on chesed really does fulfill a very important role in a woman's life, not just, you know, to be busy with something. It's really, chesed really changes the community, and it's really definitely a way for spiritual development. Another thing I think is very important, women of all ages need psychological support of others, and we have to make an effort now that so many women are working to make sure that they connect in a meaningful way and that the community plays a role in these women connecting. Not everyone goes to shiurim, so again, different kind of outlets. For example, there's this new thing that is going on in our community, which is definitely from some other bigger, wider community. Now, during the 6 weeks of Sfira, then all the women in different blocks in the community have to get together. So there are four square blocks. You have to get, you don't have to, but you're invited to get together with the other women from your community, so you'll get to know them. A lot of times we just don't even know the other women in the community. You get together for 30 minutes on Shabbat, and it's round robin. It goes to different people's houses every week. You're not allowed to put out food because it shouldn't become a pressure that has to be fancy and you have to put out your beautiful clothes. You don't even have to be dressed to the nines, and you're not allowed to give food, only drinks. You're meeting for a half hour. The first few minutes is learning together, and there's a prepared halacha sheet. Because it's the sfira, we're doing ben adam l'chaviro, so you have to do learning for a little while. Then there's a story to promote discussion. And it's very interesting to see women from all different kind of backgrounds and all different kinds of educational interests, but coming together. Many times the women of the community don't know each other and don't know what are the issues that really bother or are on the minds of other women. We don't know how to help other people in the community because we don't know what they need. So it's very interesting that I think that this kind of networking within a frum environment, with a shiur and with a story that leads to discussion, is something that is tapping into a need, because a lot of women are coming, and it's done, you know, in different sections of our community, and there's a pretty high attendance rate. And the truth is, I've met a lot of women through this, because otherwise, really, how would I meet them? And the women really feel that this is a way to grow. And in the end of every session, I almost call them, right, you have to think of some kind of goal. And either the group as a whole or each individual works on that. And we also find out who is sick, who needs to be visited, what older people or people who just gave birth need some help. I think also that single women, and especially older single women, have to be pursued and pulled into communal activities. We're very family-oriented, and many times we let these individuals fall through the cracks. So either shiurim or social justice projects should be addressed to this population. Also, mothers of young children are a very spiritually thirsty group. And if daycare could be available when certain programs are done, that would make a very big difference. Another thing is empty nesters. A lot of women whose kids are, you know, finally leaving the home, all of a sudden they have all this time on their hand, or they are looking for some kind of social interaction. Instead of them looking for an aerobics class or other things or cooking classes in order to fulfill this need, I think the shul should really provide some kind of, shiurim or spiritual nourishment, right? And also they're a great resource because they want to be involved. Also, one of the questions was a lot of people in the community are aging. I think there could be a lot of programs that could be done for seniors in the community. A lot of them are staying in their homes. Some of us have young communities. Some of us have older communities. And in our community, they had this program called Open House. Every Wednesday, they would have the women get together, and it would be a religious or a cultural or a literary program, but it was always anchored in the shul, which means the shul was one of the central, you know, locations for the community. What happens is we all go to school, right, or school becomes a central location. Then a lot of times when people get married, we want to pull them in. But on the other hand, people who have been involved in the community, right, just because they're older, right, do we, you know, neglect them? I think that we really have to be a little more transgenerational. On the personal event level, that is every, you know, Rav has to decide for their community. But I think, right, there are areas where in a life cycle, right, when a girl is born, right, there obviously is a, you know, kiddush that is made for the, you know, young woman when she is born. Sometimes people do it 3 years old. The birthday party for the girl should be getting involved in chinuch and kiyum a mitzvah, it's a bracha party, because, you know, that's a way to at least identify some kind of milestone. A girl's bat mitzvah should be centered around her achievement in learning, shmiras a mitzvah, a chesed project. There should be, again, every Rav paskins differently, but definitely it should be surrounded around the su'dat mitzvah, right? And in her su'dat mitzvah, she should deliver a dvar Torah. Also, women, before they get married, not only should learn just Tahara Mishpacha, but also the halachot of Nisuin, Ketubah, Eirusin. What is marriage? I think by infusing, you know, learning and, you know, always having a goal of spiritual growth in every milestone in life, for every age group in the community, then we can just keep this interest of learning, of spiritual growth that we really have seen already developed, you know, throughout the women in the community. Thank you.
We have time for some questions about 1 o'clock, so anybody would like to start us off?
Yes. This is an address to Professor Novak's wife. I've heard many times in the press and heard from other women in Maple Staff. I've heard from them that how do we avoid the criticism of the people in our community, but a lot of communities trying to
apologetics, and even though perhaps it might be permissible, is it advisable? Various innovations in women's
sincere
and do specifically what? Women come and show Mary Tefillin.
Well, this is definitely not a question for me, right? This is, right, not from a halachic point of view. Anyone here want to answer that? Okay. So I just want to answer from a hashkafic point of view, and definitely more from the inspiration of HaRav Michael Rosenzweig. So I'm going to definitely discuss just some of these, touch upon these topics. If it doesn't have religious value, per se, so even if someone is sincere, but what they're doing doesn't have religious value, it doesn't have halachic value, then there's no value in doing it, no matter how sincere the individual is. So I think we should really guide in people, especially women, to realize that when they want to do something in Avodas Hashem, it has to have religious value. And that is really the goal of the Posek and the Gdolim of the generation, especially in our community. We have some that we should really follow those kind of guidelines, which means it has to have inherent religious value. I think from the other point of view, there's so much that women do have in spirituality and in Avodas Hashem that we don't even have to make any kind of excuses. I think we should celebrate and really emphasize the areas that we really do have, you know, so much input. And by the way, I think that from a spirituality point of view, the women are in a very good place today, which means I think this idea that, you know, how do we foster spirituality in the community? Among the women, there definitely is a very big interest, and I'm in the college level, right? I also give a lot of adult education classes, so I really see a very big span, and I see that there's actually a very big thirst and a very big interest in trying to stay within, you know, halachic parameters. I think we're in a very different place now than we were many years ago, and the bulk of the community is really seeking, you know, within meaningful parameters to do things that are meaningful. So I think we have so much to mine within the areas that we can really participate in before, not even before, but I think we have so much to do in our areas, and that we can really find fulfillment within, you know, these wide areas of Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim. And again, sticking to the model of convergent circles and not really to try to move the circles to be totally overlapping.
I'd like to take the words of Professor Rosenzweig just one step, I don't want to step further, but perhaps elaborate on one piece. And that is, I think that when it comes to issues of women's spirituality, just like men's spirituality, there's not just one silver bullet, and there's not just one particular focus. There needs to be multiple portals of entry through which people connect spiritually. But I think it's also extremely important to recognize that we need to make sure that our Torah community doesn't just educate women and not find ways in which they play serious roles within our community. And therefore, of course, within the guidance of PSOC, and people have to be comfortable with their own poskim, and I'm not standing here as a posek, I think it is important that we find ways for women to play leadership roles. So on a very personal and perhaps professional level, I think, for example, if there are women who are studying at an advanced level and they want to play a role as educators, community educators within synagogues, I think that would be something that we should endorse, encourage, and I think that could help us in many different ways. I think that if it's done, again, within appropriate parameters that are guided by Poskim, I think that we can gain much by that. We should not think that Rabbanim can solve all the issues of spirituality for both men and women alone. And when they have partners who are within appropriate halachic frameworks, and I emphasize that exponentially, then I think that can help us all out. And we have to make sure that we find those ways, or else sometimes fringe groups within our own community will make suggestions that are not within the norms and mores that we may want to embrace. And so there will be times, and there are times, in which we, I think, need to proactively find ways within the parameters of halacha to make sure that women can play leadership roles within our communities, to make sure that those spiritual portals are opened, again, within norms and mores, consistent with the values of halacha, not creating new titles and new ideals. But the bottom line is that we need to find them. So, for example, there are some rabbanim and shuls in this community, in this group, who have women who play roles as educators within their synagogues. I think that's a wonderful thing. I think that's something we should encourage. On a professional level, it's something that, you know, I look forward to encouraging and helping to fund. And I think that as long as it's within the norms of halacha, I think we do ourselves a great service of finding those, because if we don't in a proactive way, and I agree that I think the pendulum is swinging back to a more traditional approach, but I think if we don't find ways, I think that what will happen is, on a regular basis, new ideas that are not consistent with our comfort level will be forced upon us, in quotes, or challenged us, and if we don't have ways in which we find opportunities for women to play leadership roles, to enhance spirituality, both of men and of women, I think that we do ourselves a disservice.
I wonder if partly our hyper-focus on the law, as Brander mentioned, perhaps to the detriment of exclusion of the spirit, sort of seeing the trees and not the forest, I wonder if that isn't a kind of conscious or subconscious reaction against two things.
got to stop being afraid. I mean, what are we afraid of? I mean, the reform and conservative movements, listen, in the past week, the people in charge of placement in the conservative movement and continuing education in the conservative movement have come to Yeshiva University to see what we're doing because they feel we're doing it better. And I don't think that's a Yeshiva University thing. I think that's an Orthodox thing. Don't tell me it's being taped and sent out already. Thank you, Rabbi. I think we got to stop being afraid of the liberal movements. We got to realize that we have a message. I think, for the most part, our message is winning. Although I don't think Judaism becomes richer if reform and conservative movements die, because it's not like more people are joining the Orthodox shuls. And perhaps we need to find ways in which our shuls become more friendly, so that if people are not engaged with any movements, they feel comfortable in ours. But I think we should not give up the social action card to the liberal movements. I think for the first time, even Ruth Messenger cannot say that the Orthodox aren't involved with the social action pieces. There's a group of kids who are finishing finals. One group's going to APAC, another group's going to New Orleans, making a detour to Alabama on the way to do just tikkun olam work. And they'll have kosher food and 3 minyanim a day and Shabbos with the help of a rab build an eruv so that they can carry from one location to another. But the bottom line is, I don't think we should give those things up. And I think when we as Torah communities don't find a way of using Habitat for Humanity, or as Professor Rosenzweig spoke about, making sure that we help with the local needs and not just worried about the needs around the world but our needs around the corner, I think we do ourselves a great disservice. Besides the fact, as Professor Rosenzweig said, it's part of halacha, I think we give up a piece of the language. Rav Lichtenstein, in an article that he wrote for the Orthodox Forum, and my wife speaks Yiddish fluently, and when she doesn't want me to understand, she speaks it to my children, and I don't speak any Yiddish. So the bottom line is that I think Rav Lichtenstein ends with a line that says something like this, that misnagdim don't daven, but when they do it on time, and chassidim daven, but never on time. And Rav Lichtenstein said something like, wouldn't it be nice if we could create a hybrid of both, to be daven on time, but really have the spirituality of the Hasidim. I think that that's what we should start doing. I think that each person in this room has the power and the capacity and the knowledge from their own personal experiences and the PhDs that we have from the School of Hard Knocks, our own personal pekalach that each and every one of us has, and our own wrestling to find a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that we can communicate in effective ways about having a personal relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And I think we need to start doing that. And if we don't do that, it's not about Hasidim, it's not about Misnagdim, let's live in a postmodernist era here and recognize that we can go above the denominations, even within the Orthodox community, and realize that we can take the riches, the treasures, as Rabbi Reichman spoke about, from both, and create synagogues that have the capacity to really energize by focusing not just on the Maisa HaMitzvah, but recognizing from a Maisa HaMitzvah, when we look at it properly, we also can get the Kiyum HaMitzvah.
Time for one more question.
I very, very interested in all these various different perceptions of women, women in Torah, women in halacha, women in this, women in that. And very rarely do I hear anyone discuss the fact that there is a disparity, there is a definite psychological, physiological disparity between men and women. That's why the Yisodos of Halacha are such. Therefore, I think the draw of certain women to take masculine roles in Yahdus and Torah is not something that is encouraged. I have a group of women who insisted that I, or my wife, let me well, give a shiur and gemara. I strongly object. They can learn gemara, he's a tereg, but that's not the point. The point is, what about those subjects that men neglect, which women could at least do something about that? What are those? I stopped the argument. see this, but there's nothing wrong with it.
So I'm going to take Chairman's privilege and ask one last question, which is directed to Rabbi Reichman and Rabbi Brander in terms of their overview comments. Why, given what you presented about the lack, there should not be a dichotomy between our emphasis on halacha and learning mesechtot and our ability to be able to understand Yaakov's bracha, to Ephraim and Menashe, the importance of the spiritual component, why are we failing so miserably in our day schools and yeshiva in inculcating that into the Limud HaTorah of those institutions?
Again, I don't know the answer, but I can just say from a small pigeon's eye view that I have.
I can't say, you know, from a national point of view or an international point of view. I can only share my small pigeon's hole view. I think that it's a very, very challenging world. And our kids are texting on Shabbos. They're not dressing in the most modest and tzanua ways. And you know, to be honest, when they come into shul, they hear a lot of talking, and they don't see a lot of davening. So they have a tremendous amount of messages being directed at them. That, to paraphrase Chazal, "Ma yasa ben v'lo yechta." You know, when there are so many averos so available so easily, and the Yetzer Hara is, you know, going wild, and it's very hard to overcome those challenges. So that's why I think that perhaps ways that we could strengthen things, because the outside environment is so, so difficult and so challenging. Things like taking kids out of their natural settings, you know, whether it be a Shabbaton or a trip to Israel or other such, you know, intensive environments, I think could be very, very helpful. And exposing kids to other examples and other role models that are, you know, very religiously sincere. Kids know what's genuine and what's not right away. But, you know, with time, when kids connect to people who are very sincere and very real, kids do respond to that.
Without being naive, I'm pretty optimistic that some of those issues that that Rabbi Zak asked about, I think, are changing. I think that what Rabbi Reichman said about the fact that there's a lot of static out there, that our children get mixed messages regarding davening and things of that nature, is 100% accurate. But I think that we're waking up to issues as we grow as a Torah community. I think we're waking up to issues that are important. And I see some of that in the way Rabbanim re-engage their congregations all around the country. I see the fact that I see schools that are rethinking the roles of informal education. And we just started a program that actually hasn't started yet. It'll start in 2 weeks. That we've taken 20 educators, informal educators from around the country, and we've prepared for the first time, not just in the Orthodox community, the first time in the Jewish community, a certificate program in informal education. Whether they be the heads of NCSY, whether they be heads of camp and others, we spent 2 years putting together this program. And the reason why there's interest in it, we picked 20 out of close to 150 applicants, is because there's an understanding that we need to recognize the power of informal education. Half the people in this room were my mentors, or some of them were my mentors at Yeshiva High School seminars and Torah leadership seminars. I'm looking at people that I learned from their feet. And they taught us these things, and I think we forgot some of it. And I think we're now, receding it. But I actually see the pendulum swinging back in a positive way. I actually see rabbis looking at these issues in a more rigorous fashion. I actually see schools rethinking these issues in a collaborative fashion. And I'm optimistic that some of the issues and the challenges that we all feel in our communities, that hopefully, if we re-engage, and it doesn't just apply, it applies to the way we deal with singles also. There's more people doing research about before they go out on the first date. That number one, they spend more time in research on the first, second, and third date if it ever gets there. And there are more younger people getting divorced with more people doing research at the same time. And I think it's all part of this larger issue of not looking for the right spiritual ideals and looking at the materialism and the and transient ideals. But I actually see there to be some, I see the pendulum swinging the other way. I see there for us all having these conversations. I see the fact that this is a plenary session of the RCA, one of the only ones, represents a change. I see the wonderful work that OU is doing on these issues as a change. And I see the wonderful work that every synagogue is doing and schools are doing on these issues, including the fact that the school in Memphis teaches Talmud to both men and women in the school at the present time. I see that as wonderful opportunities and wonderful changes. And I think, and I'm optimistic that these changes are going to show results. We just have to recognize the fact that not everything is a sprint. Most important things are marathons, and if you're really going to see significant change, you're going to allow, you have to allow for that marathon to happen.
I want to thank the panel.